This episode and all of our South by Southwest coverage is brought to you by Vimeo, the new home for 360 video. Hey everybody, this is John Fusco, and you're listening to the No Film School podcast. Before Ramblin' Freak, Taco Deli employee Parker Smith had made only one movie featuring sound. The three-time film school dropout was stuck between a rock and a hard place after realizing his internship at the Austin Film Society was little more than the theater job he had left in Boulder, Colorado to make a name for himself in Texas. This was just enough motivation for him to write out a budget on the back of a receipt in the kitchen at Taco Deli, purchase two archaic Panasonic DVX-100Vs, and start production on his remarkable documentary, which premiered at South by Southwest last week in the Visions section. Now, the task of making the first feature is a daunting one. Some would certainly think that filming it entirely alone should make it 100 times more difficult. For Parker, however, being the only member of his film crew provided him with exactly the freedom necessary to experiment, learn, and shoot his movie right. In Ramblin' Freak, Smith captures himself journeying in a van across the country to find legendary bodybuilder Greg Valentino. Valentino's story, his arms exploded due to overuse of anabolic steroids, merely sets the stage for the real heart of the film, Parker's deeply personal self-reckoning with his twin sister's lifelong battle with EB. Victims of epidermolysis bullosa lack a critical protein that binds the layers of skin together. Without this protein, the skin tears apart, blisters, and shears off, leading to severe pain, disfigurement, and wounds that never heal. There is no known cure. I sat down with Parker at South by Southwest to learn how he pulled off making a movie about a guy who doesn't know how to make a movie. From watching five documentaries a night rented out of a local video store to finding a producer through Instagram, he provides us with insight into the art of learning as you go. Hey everybody, it's John Fusco and I am here with Parker Smith, the director of Ramblin' Freak. Hey Parker, how you doing?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me here.
Cool. Let's just get right into it because you are really sort of what a lot of our readers are, sort of an autodidact and a person who really didn't have very many resources but did whatever he could to make his film happen. And now you're here at South by Southwest and your movie just premiered last night.
Yeah.
So let's, I guess I would start out by asking, you know, when did you realize that you first wanted to start making movies?
I remember like I was looking at colleges and I wanted to go like be like a writer or something like that at a college, and I didn't really know what to major in. And then I was touring University of Oregon and they were like, oh, we have a new film program. And I was like, holy shit, I can go study film in college. That's like a thing I can actually do. And I ended up going to University of Colorado and doing film there. And it's like a really like experimental film school, like Stan Brakhage kind of stuff. Like narrative is like a dirty word at this school, which I think explains my movie a lot because it's like, you know, I don't have an actual education.
Well, wait, so I'll ask you about that, sort of like what drew you to that experimental
form? Nothing, no.
No, nothing?
No.
just
I lived in Boulder,
yeah,
and in high school, and
oh, okay.
I just sort of, for my senior year, and so I just sort of went to CU because it was a film program and it was the only place I applied. And then you get there, and at the orientation, you've already paid your first semester's shit, and they're just like, by the way, this is what he said. He's like, this is not like an authentic film school. This is very experimental. He's like, hardly anybody comes out of this thing and gets a job.
Weird.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. And we're like, we're all sitting there, we're like, what?
Yeah.
And then they sort of, you know, and I mean, I'm not angry or anything about it, but I did feel like they were sort of, you know, trying to, all these kids come to school because they love movies, you know, movies, and they want to go make movies, and they teach you like, no, those are bad. Movies are not good. Like, you want to make, you know, art. You want to, you want to glue butterfly wings to 16 millimeter film, you know?
Yeah.
And so I did two semesters of filmmaking. You know, I was there for 4 years, but I dropped out three different times. And you know, so I did Super 8 and I did 16 millimeter, so I can, you know, I can go edit on a Steam Deck, but that's not going to get me like a job anywhere.
Right.
You know? And then they would say, well, the third and fourth classes of those, you know, the later semesters, the later years are more like professional stuff where you can learn how a microphone works and stuff like that.
Like digital sort of.
Yeah. I didn't make it that far.
Okay.
So, the movie, you know, that I just made is only like the second thing I ever made with sound. And the first thing I made was my intern video for when I moved here for the Film Society. Like, I made, you know, so, you know, I had to learn how to like level mics and stuff. making the movie.
Yeah. yeah, so I guess that's a good segue into this question that I had about what exactly did you learn while in the process of making this movie, as far as, you know, technical sort of film stuff and like DIY setups and...
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, like, I didn't plan on making the documentary. It sort of became one once. It was going to be like a narrative about a guy and his cat. Like, I was going to go do that. Kind of like, there's like Linklater's first film. He like did a Super 8 feature called It's Impossible to Learn to Plow by Reading Books,
okay,
which is actually a special feature on the Criterion Slacker. And he even does like a commentary for it. It's really cool. The movie itself, like, watch it with a commentary. Don't watch the movie, you know, cause it's like, you just skip it. but watch it with a commentary. It's great. And so I was like, I'm going to go do that, but I'm going to do it in a van with a cat. I'm going to go make a thing about, like, you know, being sad. Mm-hmm. And then the tape came and I was like, well, I have to go make a documentary now. And I realized I'm going to be like the main character of this film after I go and try and carry a movie. I think the shots slowly get better as the film goes on.
Yeah, totally.
Because I learned, like, oh, this camera looks really cool if you like let it blow out in the windows, mm-hmm, or if, mm-hmm, you like, you know, like how to make the DV look nice, like what looks better and what looks like garbage. I slowly, you know, I still don't exactly know how to color balance it. You know, the auto feature was nice. Mm. So it's interesting because, like, you know, we had a colorist come in after the fact and she was like, you know, she went made everything match. And I was like, no, like these two cameras don't even match themselves. Cause like one's, you know, much older. So the heads are worn down on the tape, mm-hmm, and like, you don't match them. Don't make things, you know, don't, if things look tungsten-y, like leave them like that. Like that's, mm-hmm, how it's supposed to be. Like they were trying to crossfade, you know, the audios and stuff on the edits. I'm like, no, leave those clunky and sharp. Like people were trying to like make it look like more professional, more like polished. But sort of, I gave myself like a lot of, wiggle room by like, the movie is about a guy who doesn't know how to make a movie.
Yeah.
So
it's just really interesting. Like you say, it's your technique gets better as the movie goes on. So it really is like,
it never gets great.
No. The story itself is fantastic. But the technique and the look aids the story, mm-hmm, in that sense. Mm-hmm. But that process, watching you sort of learn and seeing it happen is a really, I think, another part of the story that we get from the film. Mm-hmm. So you had this set up in the car. Like, did you have cameras positioned in the very beginning?
It didn't make it into the film, but there's the two dash cams, one on the road and one inside the car. And then I had, I took off the headrest of my passenger seat, uh-huh, and I mounted a camera with a GorillaPod to that. And so I have lots of shots of me like driving with one hand, like, you know, yeah, moving the camera around and like, you know, trying to like drive while shooting. I'm surprised I didn't die.
Yeah. I'm surprised. Well, there's this whole sequence in the film of videos of car crashes happening. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that was a weird thing. When I was not making anything and I was living here to sort of sell on tacos, I had this thing I would do like a lot of nights, which is, I think I was in a pretty bad place. I would just like get some beers and like just watch car crashes and like listen to music and watch car crashes on YouTube. You know, there's thousands of compilations and some of them are, you know, it's always really interesting. It's sort of like, I try to make it into my philosophy. In a car crash video, you know, there's going to be a crash, but you never know which car is going to be the one that like crashes.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it could be one up ahead. It could be the car that you're in. Mm-hmm. You know, a car could fly across the highway. You never really know who's going to die in this accident. And that's a great way to live, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when I was making the movie about a guy and a cat driving around doing nothing, I was like, I'm going to have a scene where there's a guy, the guy, at a rest stop, you know, at night watching car crashes. Like, that would be really interesting if a guy was watching car crashes while on a road trip. Like, mm-hmm, what does that say about him? And that was one thing that held over into the actual movie.
So what, where did this idea, I mean, you talked about Linklater's short a little bit, but...
It's a feature. It's a feature. Yeah. And in the commentary, he talks about, like, you know, it's so funny because, like, he would get these shots, you know, set up the camera, hit the button, and he would walk slowly away from the camera, mm-hmm, until he had his shot, and he would sprint back. And it's so funny, like, he would have these shots of, like, yeah, I had to cut out all the shot of, like, me sprinting back to save the tape. And I just thought, like, that'd be so interesting if you just didn't cut out that shot of you running back to turn off the camera. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I want to make the movie about, like, that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, in your case, it really shows that you were the only one on this film.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that experience a little bit?
So I tried to make a short, my friends Ryan Dyke and Jane Urban, we're trying to make a short that I'd written, and I just sort of felt like I couldn't like figure out how to work with a crew, because everything I did in college was by myself. I couldn't figure out how to like speak to them and like to help them to get me to do what I was trying to do, though Ryan says, you know, that I could, but I didn't feel like I was able to direct a film. I couldn't control all the moving parts or something. I couldn't figure out how to get the actor to do what I wanted him to do. So I was like, well, I'm just gonna cut out everybody and just sort of, you know, I can only be responsible for myself and the cat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the cat is there to like make you know that like it is a documentary, because like I can't control the cat. It's not a dog.
Well, he is like a character. It's almost like, I mean, it's almost like a buddy road trip film. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Like a guy with no friends.
Well, I wanted to talk about the cat actually a little bit, because what was that choice that you wanted another character there, sort of like in on the experience, or?
Yeah, well, I moved down here with him and he was like, you know, 6 months old. And it was just miserable. And I remember for the intern video that I made for the Film Society, I was like, about my first 5 minutes in Austin, like being in traffic with a cat. And that's that video. And then I was like, you know, I can't carry a film, but the cat certainly could help, you know, like that'll give some people to look at. But also just like, he's, you know, my buddy and I couldn't leave him behind.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
So how was acting in your own film?
It's not acting. Like, it is a documentary. I promise. It's not.
I think that's the question that I was trying to. How do you stay like true to yourself, sort of, when you know that you're on camera and that you are also, in a sense, you know, you have control over every aspect of the film, including your own sort of appearance.
It was a weird thing, because like, you know, for me it was like a big, like I was trying to have like this emotional thing for myself, but I was also trying to make a film. So I'm trying to like be there, be present for this, you know, this thing that I'm trying to explore, but I'm also, half my brain is like split and like trying to think of what the camera is seeing. Like there's like the shot at the end, I won't see what happens, but like the shot at the end, I remember it was happening and I was just like, oh god, I hope it, you know, it was a really emotional moment for me, but I was like, I hope the camera is still running, hope they're still taping the camera. I couldn't, like, you know, I'm trying to be there but I can't. So, you know, but you know, it's all in the end, it all works. The tapes run for an hour and you sort of forget that they're on sometimes.
So then, I guess to follow up, did everybody know that you were filming when you were filming, or did you?
No. I remember, like, there's a scene with Greg at his table. We talk for like 10 minutes, and it's not in the movie, but at the end of it, he's like, so are we rolling? Uh-huh. I'm like, yeah, we've been going for like 10 minutes. I just sort of filmed constantly because they're tape. I bought like a bunch of them. Just sort of filmed all the time, nonstop.
Was that, let's talk about that decision to shoot on the Panasonic, what is it, the 100?
DVX-100B.
DVX-100B, yeah.
I just thought, I had like a shitty computer. I was like, I can't, it was okay. Well, it's forgiving, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like sort of a tough camera, and it's the camera that I used to shoot the Puffy Chair. So I was like, well, that movie worked, you know, so I can just do that. You know, like, I didn't have the money to go buy a nice camera, or I wouldn't even know how to use a nice camera. Mm-hmm. And this sort of seemed simple, and it was just like, you know, tapes are easy.
But you had a Leica lens you used?
I mean, it's a camcorder. It's all one piece.
Okay, like, cool. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's funny that you used that particular camera, because I did an interview with, do you know the... like Kyle Mooney,
that
whole group. They started off with
the
that
Good
camera.
Neighbor stuff videos.
Yeah, the Good Neighbor videos.
Yeah, yeah, those are awesome.
So
yeah, no, everyone, like all the filmmakers that see, they're like, yeah, I know that camera. Like, I love that camera. Yeah. So like, it's just an awesome camera. It's, you know, 15 years old, and it's such a pain in the ass. Like to import, like, you know, I can't. There's shots that I wanted to replace, like, you know, some close ups of like inserts and stuff that I wanted to replace, but like the process of like getting the tape off the camera and into the computer. Broke by the end of the film.
Damn.
So I like was stuck with it.
How much did you like sort of budget yourself for your equipment?
I actually have this receipt paper at home. From when I was at work on break, I was like, did a budget, like, you know, I'm like $100 for a mic, $100 for this. And then I looked at it recently and the math is all wrong. Like, I didn't know. I worked one guy at my job, I sell tacos. Yeah. One guy quit one day, and all of a sudden there was a bunch of hours that needed to be covered. And so I worked like 110 hours in 2 weeks, and I got like a really nice paycheck. And then I just dumped it all in stuff. I was like, what do I need? Like, you know, I was like, I need two shotgun mics. I need some cables. I need some tripods. I bought some, you know, the dead cats. I never used them. I never used those, but I was like, well, you know, what do people to make films by?
Yeah. did you have like any sort of resource that you were looking at to?
Yeah, nofilmschool.com. You should check it out.
Okay, well, here's a good site.
Yeah, now just Google like the best shotgun mic that's cheap, mm-hmm. you know?
Life happens in 360 degrees, and now on Vimeo.com, so do your videos. Now you can upload, watch, and even sell your 360 videos on Vimeo. Vimeo 360 means immersive eye candy, immersive adventures, and immersive storytelling from the world's best filmmakers. Plus, Vimeo has tons of helpful resources for all experience levels. You can learn how to shoot, how to edit, and even get roundups of the best 360 video gear. Join the new home for 360 video at Vimeo.com/360. Where did you buy the equipment? How did you go about tracking down what you needed?
eBay for the cameras. Mm-hmm. You know, I bought the one with Greg, and then I had to buy the same one again.
So you had two. How many cameras did you have total?
Two of the DVX, and then two dash cams. Mm-hmm. Apparently, there's no like American market for dash cams, so okay. You got to buy them all from China.
Huh.
So I found some with that had LCD screens, so I could see the shot, which not all of them have. And then I was like leaving like, you know, Friday, and they were held up at customs. They weren't coming. Hmm. And so I was like, well, I might just have to omit the whole part of the film, which is was going to ruin the dash cam car crashes thing. I was like, that was a big part of it. But they came. They were pieces of crap. They like you know, you'll notice like halfway through the film, they stopped appearing because they stopped working, you know? but the audio is nice. Like the audio, we used the audio in the film. Like mm-hmm. It worked well enough.
Yeah, what did you use for the audio? Just two shotgun mics?
Two shotgun mics,
like,
yeah.
On the
thing. You know, huh. So there's some, they didn't even have like a nice mount, had like some old mounts that, there's some occasional like popping and stuff that happens, but I think it works.
Mm.
So I had those two. I bought the two GorillaPods, the big ones with the nice ball heads. Those are awesome. I bought two real tripods that I'd never even used.
Okay. Well, it's good to be prepared.
Yeah. I was just like, I don't know what I need. I'm just going to buy everything.
Yeah.
So microphones, cameras, tripods. I bought an LED light.
Yeah, lights.
I want to know just a little hot shoe.
Just one?
Yeah.
Not like a panel or anything? Just like a little...
Like a little LED like panel the size of like, you know...
Mm.
I don't think I ever used that either.
Okay.
You know? I just bought everything I thought I might need, and then I was broke, and I had to go and get a credit card to make the film.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go buy a van.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, the van. So I like called Greg on in the first scene on like the 16th of September.
Mm-hmm.
2 days later, it's my birthday, the 18th of September, and I'm like going out to the other side of Texas, which is a big state.
Yeah.
To make a music video in my van with 200,000 miles, that was going to be the whole point of the film, and it broke down in the middle of nowhere, and I left it in the desert. We got back, this family was coming there, and they picked us up in their RV because they had left it behind in a similar situation.
Hmm.
And we rode back with them, and they were like, they were their own movie for sure. They could have been.
Yeah.
And so I had to like go buy a new van. I was like, I was attached to the Honda Odyssey for the vehicle. Like, yeah, that was where the idea came from. And so I went to the credit union. I got like a loan for, which was like, at the time, I was like, this is the most adult thing I've ever done by far. You know, I'm going to go buy a van by myself. Like, I don't have like a co-signer. No, like I'm just going to go do it.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, I think I accidentally like became an adult making this movie.
Yeah, well, I think making a movie is, you know, I was at a Gareth Edwards keynote yesterday, and or maybe it was 2 days ago. God, I don't know. Days here are just
he's
blurring into each other.
I get him and the guy that did the raid confused. They have similar names.
They are different people.
Yeah, there's the monsters guy and there's the raid guy.
It's monsters guy who did Rogue One.
Yeah,
but he was
Gareth Edwards, and who did?
I feel like they have the same exact name.
Yeah.
But
some people are like at home pissed right now.
if you know their name, chime in, let us know. But he said, you know, like you should never feel like a film is a failure. Like, you did it. Mm. If you made a movie, you've done it. You know, you've done this journey. You've become an adult.
Yeah. I did for sure think it was a failure the whole way up there. I was like, I am not getting anything I need to get. I don't know even what I'm trying to do. I thought it was a failure like the whole way back home. I thought it was a failure the first like 6 months. It wasn't really until like, you know, until Glenn came on, my producer, that I was like, okay, this is not like a bad idea of a movie. Mm.
So let's talk about actually how much footage did you get?
And 55 hours of tape.
Okay.
And then like the dash cams just rolled the whole time. So like 200 hours of dash cams until they broke.
Jesus.
They were, so, you know, I didn't even like, I had to like mentally remember like, oh, when it happened on the camera that I can like, on the dash cam that I can go look for. So because I couldn't view the whole thing.
Right.
But the tape, you have to like sit there and like watch it hour by hour. Mm-hmm. Every hour, it takes an hour to import.
Were you logging any of the
important
stuff?
Yeah, so like the 2 months after the trip, I just sat there in my room like importing tape and like drinking beer like for hours.
That's fun.
I think maybe like, I'm supposed to like make this journey and like get out of this thing I was in, but like I just had to go relive it again for 2 months. So I think I just fell deeper into this into this hole.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, I wouldn't want to do that again, but I also really like loved that. I filled up a legal pad full of notes, and I, you know, they're all out of order, because I just like, when I took a tape out, I just tossed it in the bag. So it was like I like random, like, oh, you know, there's some parts that were really hard to watch. I was like, I had to get used to hearing my own voice and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, I never, ever, ever wanted to be on camera.
Mm-hmm.
For the record, okay. You know, people are like, yeah, you love filming yourself. Like, no, that's not true. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do this. It was really interesting. I don't like, if I make another movie, I don't think I want to do it on tape. I think I'm done with that.
I was actually going to ask, like, you know, why do you think tape has died?
Because it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Do you think it's complete? Like, I mean, I was very impressed that you were able to make an entire hour and a half feature out of this, you know, like using that format, because I was just talking with my dad. I'm actually going on a road trip in like 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to like borrow.
Where are you going?
Going across like from New York to LA, like the entire the entire gambit, and I want to get a camera and like do basically what you did.
You can borrow one.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm trying from you.
Sure.
Oh, would that be awesome? Right. We'll talk about that.
Okay, yeah.
Talk about that later. But my dad asked me, you know, like, do you want to borrow my camera? It's like 15 years old. It's on tape. Like, is that something that you can use? And I was just kind of like, no, like not really. Like, I have to be using these mirrorless cameras or like these DSLRs to really get practice.
Yeah,
I guess.
I never liked the way the DSLRs look. Mm-hmm. Like the DV like has a lot of character, because it's like it's garbage.
Yeah,
and, you know. So this it looks interesting. But yeah, no, I've never been a fan of the way that like a DSLR stuff looks.
Did you have to, what was sort of like getting the picture in that sense? Like, is all this sort of measuring ISO and aperture, is that all the same with using tape? Or
I don't know. You know, you have a little view screen, you're like, well, this looks all right here.
Cool.
I remember like the first one, I was like, you know, trying to learn how to use a camera in my backyard, and like looking at the footage I got, I was like, well, holy crap, none of this, I don't even know how to make things look nice. I learned how to use it slowly but surely.
Yeah.
You know, I shot some music videos later on for some friends of mine, and like,
also on the Panasonic?
Yeah. They were like, oh, you know, we want a video, but like, this is a 4:3. Like,
yeah,
this doesn't look very good. Like this. And the problem is now their videos look like they're like 15 years old.
Yeah.
So they look like they've been around forever, which I don't know if they want that.
Well, but it has character. Like
you know,
said,
like, you know, like VHS, like for like punk videos, like makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, this is like a bluegrass band.
Okay.
They don't want like a, you know, maybe like 16 millimeter for them. I don't know.
So then how did you go about getting this thing produced?
Instagram. You know, I'm not like super savvy on that. Somehow it just happened. I was like, you know, I was trying to edit the public access studio. They have a nice thing down there. Like, you know, they'll teach you how to use the equipment, and they'll give it to you as long as you give them something to make out of it, you know?
Okay.
So I was down there trying to edit, and it was never going to happen because it was just such a slow process. And they were only open for like 6 hours a night on like 4 nights a week. It was never going to get finished. And so I started like reaching out to people. Like, I was trying to find, you know, like, I emailed Vincent Gallo. He didn't reply. Met some people in town. Didn't like them. They didn't like me, I don't think. It didn't go well. And then one day I was in my bedroom drinking, and I taped my cell phone to my ceiling fan and I turned it on slow motion and I posted it on Instagram, and then somehow this guy, Glenn Zipper, liked the video, even though I don't, you know, I don't know any hashtags or anything. I'm not even sure how he found it. He liked it and he liked some of my other stuff. And then he followed me and I was like, hey, look at this trailer. Like, what do you think? Like, you know, he's like, well, when is it, you know, do you have something I can see? Do you have the film? I'm like, no, no. Like, this trailer is the first thing I've done with it. And it took me like, you know, 5 months to even get this much done. He's like, well, how about this? I'll send you a computer and you can edit on at home. And then in return, I'll be your producer. And I was just like, maybe, yeah. You know, maybe. Like, I was like, I didn't really know who he was or even what that meant. I was like, what does that producer do?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, we do everything else that you don't want to do. I'm like, all right, that sounds great. Which is true. Like, you know, there's like filmmaking, you can all the camera and stuff, and then everything else that you still have to do yourself up until that point. And so, and then I sent him like 30 minutes of like uncut footage, like an idiot. Like, he sent me the computer and I was like, hey, check out this raw footage. Like, you're going to love it. And he was like, this is, you know, he said, quote, I'm going to have to spin this. I'm like, no, you're not. Like, and, so that, you know, sort of cooled him off a little bit on the project. And then I went and I edited for like, you know, four or five months. I took out a loan from the same bank that gave me the car to pay myself for a month and a half to edit full time.
Cool.
I'm still paying that off. It was like a personal loan. Like, it was like a 14% interest rate or some ridiculous thing.
Damn.
Which I know what that means now. You know?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. That's high. That's very high. And I just like stayed in my room for several months and just worked all the time. And then, you know, a week before South by deadline, I sent them a 2.5 hour long cut. Mm. And they were like, well, this is nice. It's too long. Mm-hmm. We're going to get you an extension and we're going to get it down to like, you know, more manageable time. And we did like an hour and a half now.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. It was 3.5 hours of, you know.
Well, it's a lot of footage.
Yeah, it's a lot of footage. And it's mostly just a guy driving, you know. The movie is the brown bunny with like a cat. Mm-hmm. And no blowjob, unfortunately. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. Sorry, guys. If you're looking for blowjobs, this is not the film for you. Yeah. So then
maybe the next one, you know?
Yeah. Hopefully. Okay. So then what was the timeline there as far as like getting the producer, getting the edit done and getting into South By?
I think, Glenn sent me the computer. I got it the July 4th weekend.
Last year?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the deadline for South By was October 20th. I think I sent them the first cut October like 16th.
Okay.
And then he got his extension all the way to December 20th. And so then we did like seven more cuts, like back and forth emailing, never talked on the phone. He thinks we did, but we never talked on the phone until we got in. He called me like when we got in, which was the day before Valentine's Day. We finally got in.
Wow.
And, so it was, you know, and then, so once we submitted and, there was like a month long gap where I just had nothing to do, which was awesome. Like, because I felt like accomplished, like I can relax a little bit.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
For the first time since I started making the film, I was like able to like, I can play a video game, I can like watch a movie and like not feel like I should be working instead.
Right.
The video store in town had a nice deal. I Love Video. For $50, they gave you unlimited rentals for 2 months.
Oh, shit.
Like five at a time. And I just crushed like a little curriculum. Like, cause
nice.
I never like watched documentaries before I made this. So I had to like go and like learn about stuff so I can, and well, things like this, I can talk about documentaries now.
What were some of the documentaries that you watched?
County, USA.
Harlan County, yeah.
Which is in Kentucky and I'm from Kentucky. So that was really cool. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. It's like a third world country in Eastern Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Stuff like that.
Stuff like that. Stuff like, cool.
Maisel's Brothers and stuff, you know. Salesman. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that.
Cool. Now that you've made your first feature, you know, you just said it was nice because you had some time to relax.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel? Like, was it the cathartic sort of moment or experience that you
totally
wanted?
I was at this interview, and they were like, what was the most exciting part of the journey? And I was like, there's nothing exciting on the journey. Like, it was miserable.
Mm-hmm.
So the most exciting part was getting to South By, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the catharsis came, I guess. There's not necessarily any catharsis in the film, maybe a little bit at the end, but like, it really came in reality, like, I think yesterday.
Okay. You know? All right. Yeah, at the premiere, right?
Yeah. It was wild. You know, people want to interview me and talk to me and stuff. It's crazy. I was, you know, selling tacos. I was delivering tacos. I had to be there at 5 a.m. yesterday.
Yeah.
Delivering tacos downtown. And I, you know, clocked out at 1. And then I went to the premiere at 3:45. It's a trip. So yeah, you know, now I can move on, I guess.
Yeah.
It's, the book is closed.
Well, what is the next move?
After I imported all the tape, you know, really in a lowest low place, I met the devil himself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's that?
I can't tell you, but I'm gonna go find him.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. I'm gonna track him down. I'm gonna find him.
Okay.
I'm gonna exact my revenge.
So wait, this is someone you met on your trip?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, here in town.
Oh, here in town.
Yeah. And I really don't want to say anything else because he might be listening.
Okay. Interesting.
I mean, probably not. He probably has no real recollection of me at all. But yeah, I'm gonna go find him.
Is it a doc or a feature?
It.
Or I mean, a doc or a narrative?
You know, I never really liked hybrid films, but I think it's going to be a little bit of both.
Okay,
just because,
cool.
Like, you know, like reenactments, sort of. Because, mm-hmm. Like, there's, you know, I'm going to... Something like that. Something like that, you know?
Will this one be on a Panasonic?
No, I was talking to my producers last night, and they were like, we're going to get you, like, a real camera. And I was oh, shit. Like, can you guys show me how to use it?
Yeah.
You know? Like, we'll get you, like, three lenses. And I was like, whoa. I'm like a one-lens kind of guy.
Yeah. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's wild.
Well, congrats on that. I mean, that's enough right there. Just the fact that you have someone backing your next feature.
Right? Yeah. I mean, this film, there's a lot of, like, you know, I can't do the fumbling thing anymore. I can't do the hapless guy. Mm. And, like, I don't think people would, like, accept that. Like, you know, you need to grow up and learn how to make a movie for once. Mm. So I gotta get better.
Yeah. Well, keep, like, filming stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So then I guess I'll just close out this whole thing by asking, I mean, you're having just gone through it. Do you have any advice for, or like if you had a best piece of advice for anyone who's trying to make a movie?
Yeah. This is like when I was interning, one of the programmers at AFS, Lars Nielsen, he's like, so what are you in Austin for? I was like, well, I want to make movies. He's like, well, are you making movies? And I was like, no. He's like, well, that's not how you do it. Like, he's like, you should go buy a camera and you should go make documentaries. Mm. Like that, you know, learn how it works and like learn how to tell a story and then do that. And that is what I did.
Yeah.
And that's why we're here right now. It's like, I bought a camera and I went out and I made a movie.
Yeah.
Go outside and, you know, make a documentary about somebody. Like it's, you can do it by yourself. You know, you don't need a crew. If you want to make a narrative, you know, thing with actors and stuff, that's harder. I don't have any advice for you.
Yeah.
You know, I failed at that, but, hopefully I'll learn at some point. Yeah. Just go outside and do it.
What, just a follow-up question then, like, where do you get the inspiration for these documentaries? You know what I mean? Like, where do you find the source material?
Let bad things happen to you.
Okay.
You know, go out there and like live a life and, you know, talk to homeless guys, stuff like that, you know, like talk to guys at bars, talk to, you know, muscle men, just,
Yeah. Cool. Well, great, man.
Yeah.
It's great talking to you.
Thank you.
Good podcast.
All right. Cool.
Good luck with the rest of your trip here.
Hey, thanks,
I mean,
man.
You live here, so.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to go home after this and take a bath.
Cool.
Thanks for having me on.
No problem. We'll see you later. Thanks for listening, guys. Be sure and come back next Monday to check out the next in our South by Southwest interview podcasts. As you can tell, we got some really good stuff. There was just a bunch of solid movies and a bunch of really great filmmakers who were very good at getting across their own individual paths to what it took to getting their film made. In addition, be sure and tune in to Indie Film Weekly this Thursday. And if you like the show, keep on giving us love on iTunes and make sure to subscribe so you get every single episode of the No Film School podcast directly to your phone without even having to go to a site or anything and download them. Cut out the middleman. I'm John Fusco. You can follow me on Twitter at @Jim_John_Jim. You can follow No Film School on Twitter @No Film School. And I will see you on Thursday. Thanks.